You're listening to the Birth Matters Podcast, episode 70.
So you just touched on something that I think that was the biggest thing that doula Emily said to me that switched the light like on, where she was like, you deserve to have a good birth. And I hadn't really thought about that before. Like, I was just like, oh, I'm just giving birth. Like, everybody gives birth or whatever. But she was like, no, you deserve to have the best care. Like, why don't you deserve that? And so she's like, that's what we're going to get for you. And she like went for it and helped me. And it's amazing.
Hey there, and welcome to the Birth Matters Show. I'm your host, Lisa Graves Taylor, founder of Birth Matters NYC Childbirth Education and Labor Support. This show is here to lessen your overwhelm on the journey into parenthood by equipping and encouraging you with current best evidence info and soulful interviews with parents and birth pros. Please keep in mind the information on this show is not intended as medical advice or to diagnose or treat any medical conditions. Please know that we welcome your feedback on the show. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, and what you'd like to hear or learn in future episodes. Reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Birth Matters NYC, or you can email us at podcast@birthmattersnyc.com. Charisse felt like she was getting lackluster care in her pregnancy at a hospital under Medicaid, but thought she just had to deal. She was being told she should just schedule a C-section because of her age and being overweight, and it didn't sit right with her. Then one day, when she was around 30 weeks pregnant, she encountered a doula who encouraged her that she deserves to have respectful care and a great birth. This empowered her to switch to giving birth at home, something she never thought someone on Medicaid could do, thanks to some flexibility on the part of her midwives and a community birth fund. She shares today about the radically better, deeply respectful care she received when she switched to working with home birth midwives and doulas, and details specific ways in which she felt heard and safe. Now let's hear from Charisse. Welcome to the Birth Matters Podcast, Charisse. It's so good to have you today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Charisse is not one of my former birth class students, as most of the podcast birth stories are, but she is a local doula in training. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
And can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Charisse. I live in Washington Heights, and I currently work as an early childhood educator. I mostly, for the last 10 years, have worked with infants and toddlers, and I work in a school. Our philosophy is called the Rye Approach, which basically is about treating infants and toddlers with respect and as capable, competent individuals, and not just, you know, babies that can't do anything. And I'm actually in the Manhattan Birth Mentor Program right now to be a doula, with the goal of being really a full-spectrum doula. But while my infant is still really young, probably mostly postpartum work, and thinking about a way to bridge doula work with early childhood education is something that I'm tinkering with right now. And I gave birth in September.
Not long ago.
Well,
thank you for being willing to share your story when it's so fresh still. And, yeah. And when you're still probably fairly sleep deprived, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes, very much so.
And you said you just went back to work, right?
I did. So mm-hmm. I had started virtually maybe like 2 weeks ago, but like this week was my first week like being back at school. So it was a little hard, but you know.
Yeah, that transition can be challenging.
What you gotta do, you know.
So can we start off by sharing a little bit about the prenatal experience? How did you prepare for this journey into parenthood, your choice of care providers, and any developments?
Yeah. So when I found out I was pregnant, I was very excited, but I also was kind of worried because I felt like I knew I wasn't necessarily going to get the best care being a Medicaid recipient. So when I got to the hospital and was doing all like my prenatal work, I was correct in the fact that like I felt very much like I wasn't listened to. I felt like I didn't really have agency over choices that were being made. You know, I was told that, you know, because I'm 40 and I'm overweight, that I needed to have either an induction or a C-section. Like natural birth wasn't going to be a choice for me, even though I had no other risk factors. And
it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I just have to say that for listeners who don't know that that's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I have great blood pressure, great cholesterol, no diabetes. Like, yeah, I am overweight and I am a little older. But I mean, other than that, like, no other risk factors. And they were just adamant, like, we need to schedule your induction. Are you sure? Or, you know what? You're probably better off having a C-section. Yeah, we should definitely have a C-section. And in my mind, I was just thinking to myself, like, women have been giving birth since the dawn of time. Like, I don't really need these interventions unless I could see if I had like preeclampsia or like some other like major risk factor, but I didn't. But you know, like, what am I going to do? I am on Medicaid and I'm going to this hospital. So like, this is just what it is, what it is. But I kept getting this feeling in my gut that it just wasn't right. And I even had like some experiences with the clinicians that were just bad. There was one time I was bleeding. I called and called and called. Nobody called me back. I had a UTI. And I called and nobody called me back. Thank goodness. One of my best friends is a urologist and like prescribed medicine for me all the way from like Florida.
Oh my goodness.
So, I mean, it was just like a lot of feeling of neglect. And around that same time, I had seen in the news and heard the story of Amber Rose Isaac, who had passed away in the Bronx. And basically because of racism and neglect. And I started feeling like very scared. And then I had some experiences with some clinicians. I never saw the same clinician, which I understand, like it's a big practice. They want you to meet all the clinicians, but I never knew who I was going to see. They would make my appointments for me or change my appointments for me. They wouldn't notify me. I just would have to check the app all the time. It was like really bad. And then I had a clinician say to me at one point, which was really upsetting. It's one of those, like, it's supposed to be a compliment, I suppose, but it really wasn't, where they're like, oh, you're so well-spoken. And I was just like, why? Because I live in the Bronx and I'm Latina. Talk to me about being well. It was just weird. The whole experience was just really bad. And also, like, you know, it's COVID, so I can't take my partner with me to these appointments. And I would come home crying and upset because I just felt like I wasn't being listened to. And then one day, and this sounds kind of lame, but thank God it happened. So one day, a friend and a colleague of mine posted on her Instagram stories about Doula Collective, who were looking to get donations for a community fund. And I went and I looked at their page and I looked at the work that they were doing and I was really impressed. And I thought to myself, like, I wonder if they can help me. And I'm the type of person that it's extremely hard for me to ask anyone for help. I do everything myself. Like, I've been that way like my whole life. But at this point, like, I was just having such a negative experience that I was like, I need help. Like, I can't. This is not okay. Like, what's happening to me and what's happening to my baby is like not okay. And so I sent this really long, really emotional email about my experience that I was having. And Emily is from Ashe Birthing Services, got back to me. And she was like, you are exactly the type of person that we want to help. You know, you're a person of color, you're Latina, you're having these really negative experiences at a major hospital. Like, no, we are going to sort this out for you and help you get better care. And even still, like, I assumed, like, okay, better care, meaning like I would have a doula and have somebody helping me advocate for myself and whatever. But Emily like went beyond that and was like, no, like, you don't have to give birth at that hospital. Who says you have to give birth at that hospital? And I was like, well, they said I have to have a C-section. They said I have to have an induction, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, no, just because you're 40 does not mean that you have to have an induction or a C-section. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not true. And she's like, did you know you can have a home birth? And I was like, I'm not having a home birth. I was like, don't I need like an epidural? Like, don't I need like She was like, no, you can do this. Let's talk about it. And like, you know, she showed me a lot of research. She showed me, you know, things that kind of convinced me, like, you know what, like, women have been doing this forever. Like, yes, I can do this. Right. And so she gave me a list of like a bunch of different midwives who did like sliding scale and who were willing to like be flexible with payment and to work with me and stuff. And so I reached out to several of them and all of them were booked except for Tanya and Rabina at Small Things Grow Home Birth, which thank God.
Which is amazing. That's a miracle because they are popular and wonderful.
And you know, I talked to my partner about it. My partner, you know, he's like super duper supportive. So he was like, if you don't want to give birth to the hospital, you don't have to give birth to the hospital. Like, let's figure it out.
Yay. So, that's unusual. A lot of partners are like, oh, well, also, I don't know.
I'm sure he's the type of guy who would be like, let's avoid the hospital at all costs, really.
Okay.
So when we met with Tanya and Rabina, from the very beginning, it felt really right. Like, we felt listened to and heard, and really, like, they assured us, like, you know, he did have some concerns about, like, you know, what if there's a problem, or, you know, what if something happens? But, like, you know, especially the way they spoke, like, you know, that we'll know there's a problem, we'll transfer you, like, this is safe. They both have a method of speaking that's so reassuring that I felt immediately safe. Whereas when I was at the hospital getting care, I didn't feel safe. Right. And so up until that point, it was a thing of being miserable and being sad and feeling isolated and lonely. And also it's COVID and, like, I can't bring my partner with me and, like, all these things. And then I met Emily, Tanya, and Rabina, and it was like, this birth is going to feel good now. I was really not having the best prenatal time. Like, and I was having the easiest pregnancy too. Like, when I say to you, like, I didn't have morning sickness, I didn't have any aches and pains. Like, my pregnancy was so great. It was so chill, except for the fact that it was also horrible because my prenatal care was horrible. Mm. So that's when it switched. And this is already late. So this is about 30 weeks. And so we basically decided, you know what, this is it. Like, we're going to go with Tanya and Bina. And they're super flexible, super caring. And we were really happy, very happy. The rest of my prenatal care went swimmingly. And then it was time to give birth. And,
and that were was your... a
really wild ride. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, can I just ask about your prenatal visits? Were those in your home? Or where were they?
No. So because of COVID, I would go to Tanya's office or Bina's office. Mm-hmm. And then we had some virtual visits in between over Zoom. And unfortunately, like, again, my partner couldn't come to those in-person visits, but he was there for all the virtual visits, which was really great. And even though they couldn't come to my home, like, going to their offices felt like being at home, because it was like their offices are their homes. Mm-hmm. And it just felt very comfortable and very safe. And yeah, like, so different from, like, the cold, like, clinical setting, and so warm and so loving. That's the main difference. I felt like my prenatal care, once I switched to them and switched to also having a doula, I felt like my prenatal care was full of love and empathy mm-hmm. and kindness, as opposed to just like, you're some 40 fat lady, like, we're going to cut you open and take out your baby and that's it. You know,
I mean, so we all need that switch. And we all deserve that. Right. But, like, especially in these times of COVID, we especially need that nurturing spirit. And Tanya's office and home are they're Upper West Side, right?
Yeah.
Rabina, is she still in Brooklyn?
She's in Brooklyn. You just touched on something that I think that was the biggest thing that Emily said to me that switched the light, like, on, mm-hmm. where she was like, you deserve to have a good birth. And I hadn't really thought about that before. Like, I was just like, oh, I'm just giving birth. Like, everybody gives birth or whatever. But she was like, no, you deserve to have the best care. Like, why don't you deserve that? And so mm-hmm. she was like, that's what we're going to get for you. Mm-hmm. And she, like, went for it and helped me. And it's amazing.
Oh, it's so fantastic. And I'll be sure to link to Ashe Birthing Services and Manhattan Birth information and Small Things Grow, all of these things that Charisse is mentioning. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes.
Actually, Emily ended up becoming, she was my birth assistant instead of my doula. And my mm-hmm. doula was Myla, which is Birthing Place the Bronx. Yes.
She's fantastic.
And she is so grounding. I mean, so when I started, should I go into my birth story now? Or
if you're ready to, go right ahead.
So September 8th, that night, I stayed up really late and folded every single item of baby clothes that was in our house. And really, like, I guess I hadn't really nested, like, at all. And then, like, that night I was like, oh, snap, I got to fold all these baby clothes and get them put away. Because the thing is, so let me explain a little my situation. I had just moved to a new apartment. So I had moved from the Bronx to Washington Heights. Mm-hmm. Horrible time to move, but, like, that's just what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So we still weren't really unpacked or anything. So I had, like, this huge box of baby clothes and I was sitting there looking at it. My partner and I were watching TV, and actually he had fallen asleep watching a movie. And I'm sitting there looking at those baby clothes and I was like, dude, I better Sorry, I'm also from California, so I say dude a lot. I apologize. It's a bad habit. But I was like, okay, I got to get this stuff folded. Like, Diego's due like any minute. He was due September 5th, and this is like September 8th, and I still hadn't done anything. I don't know what was going on in my mind. So I started
denial.
Basically. So literally until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I was up folding clothes. And so I was just like, okay, let me get this done. And I went to bed. And then I woke up the next day. And you know, like, you know when you get your period and you feel like, oh, there's something weird happening in my body. Like, I think I'm getting my period. Like, that's kind of the way I felt. And I said to my partner, I was like, it almost feels like I'm getting my period, but it's not. I was like, I think something's happening. And he's like, really? And I was like, yeah, I think something's happening, but I don't know. But I wasn't having like any contractions or anything. So this was the 9th. But my body just felt weird. Like it's, I felt like something was happening. So then I had a regular day. It was fine. Then I woke up the next day and my back was killing me. And I was like, I really think something's happening. So basically, like, all of a sudden, like, I started having, like, little contractions. And I knew. And I was like, okay, this is happening. I don't know if it's coming today or what's happening. But, like, this is starting. So
I hope,
like,
you got a better night's sleep that night.
No, not really. Like, that whole week.
Hard to sleep then.
It was so hard to sleep. It was really hard to sleep that whole week. And also, like, I've never done this before. So, like, I don't know what to feel. And, you know, I was saying this to my sister. I was like, I don't think, okay, this is just like my sense of humor or what. I don't know. But, like, I don't think that giving birth is a prank. No. But I do feel like women aren't honest with other women about, like, what the real experience is. Cause I said to my mom and my sisters, I was like, you guys didn't tell me my body's going to have this happen to it. Or, like,
you there's forget, like, these
like that's what my sister said.
I think it's amnesia to an extent.
Yeah, because then why would you ever do this again, right? But so like all these things were happening in my body, and I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure like this is what it is. So then I started feeling contractions, and like all day they were all over the place, right? So I call Myla and I call Emily and I talk to Tanya, and everyone's like, oh, you're having like probably like really early labor. It's going to be a couple days. Like your contractions are not, you know, there's no rhythm, rhyme, or reason. They're just kind of like, you know, whatever's happening. And so I was like, okay, so I'm just going to be laboring for a while, right? And this was going on all day where, like, I would have a contraction or a surge that would last for, like, maybe, like, 20 seconds. And then I'd have another one, like, maybe, like, 10 minutes later that would last for, like, 2 minutes. And then I'd have one, like, 5 minutes later that would last for, like, a minute. And it was literally just all over the place. But then towards, I want to say, like, 8 or 9 o'clock, it started feeling real, like, more urgent. But they were still, like, there was no consistency in my contractions at all. Like, none whatsoever. Myla and Emily were pretty convinced that it was still early labor. And then at one point, I think it was like 11 o'clock at night or something. And I don't mean to be like, this is just what I experienced. So I'm just like, some people tell their birth stories and they sound so beautiful and eloquent, but like,
no, please tell it like,
kinda like
it
a whirlwind. Right. So like, I said to my partner, I was like, I either have to poo or puke. I don't know which one. I was like, but one of those things has to happen.
Throw down or throw up.
Yeah. And he was like, don't you remember from birth class? Like, if you feel like you have to poo, that's the baby. And I was like, oh, like, I didn't remember anything.
It all flies out of your head. Yeah.
So then, like, I call Myla and, you know, I'm on the phone with her and I'm having a surge. And she's like, okay, you know, sounds like maybe you need some in-person support. I'm just going to eat. And this was like 11:30, 12-ish. I'm just going to eat and then I'm going to come over. And you know, she talks and it's so soothing. And I was like, okay, everything's going to be okay. Like, at that point, I was kind of like freaking out, right? And I didn't ask her to come over. But she could tell, right? So she's like, I'm going to eat and then I'm going to come over and, you know, Emily will come and then Tanya will come and it'll be fine. I was like, okay. And then I went into my bedroom and I was like, like, and so I got on my hands and my knees and like, I felt like I needed to push and like, I didn't have control over it. And I just kind of like pushed like, and I guess part of the call, the amniotic sac like came out and I was like, oh, something happened. And I thought it was like the baby's head or something. And like, I was like, Robin, my partner, I was like, come. I was like, what is that? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, it's like a ball of liquid. And I was like, oh boy, like call somebody. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't even know like what I did. I dialed her in like some weird way, but then like my partner gets on the phone with her. She's very calm, of course, you know, described to me what you see. And he describes it. He's like, you know, it's like a big ball of liquid that's come out of her vagina. And she's like, okay, so that's probably like the amniotic sac. So he's like, you know, it's still intact. She's like, how big is it? He's like, it's about the size of a fist. And she's like, okay, so I think I'm going to come over right now. Because remember, she was going to eat and then, you know, whatever, and they come over. She's like, I'll be there in about 8 minutes. And I'm like, oh, thank God. And I was like, in my head, I was like, I'm going to give birth and there's not going to be any like professionals here. Be like me. And then because the whole time I thought that I was in early labor and it wasn't going to happen that day, I didn't set up like the birthing pool. So of course I'm like freaking out in my head, like, oh no, I messed up. Like, I didn't set up the birthing pool. What am I going to do? And then Myla gets here and I need to push. Like, I feel like I need to push. And Myla's like, resist the urge because Tanya's on her way. And I'm like, are you joking? Like, how am I supposed to resist the urge? But Myla's so calm and she's like touching my body, helping me. And I'm squeezing his arm for like dear life. Like every time, like I feel the need to push because I was feeling it. Like I was like, I need to push. And every time I felt the need to push, I like would squeeze his arm really hard. And like, I was clenching my legs together, like really trying not to push. And I don't know like how Tanya doesn't have like a million tickets, or maybe she does, but she got here like super fast.
I think she just posted on social the other day about like getting tons of tickets. I saw it. It's like a midwife thing, right?
Yeah. So Myla had gotten here like really fast, like 8 minutes. And then Emily had gotten here also very quickly. And then Tanya was the last to arrive. But they all got here so fast. And I was like, thank God. And then, so I'm laboring kind of like on my bed and I felt the need to push. And then I was just like, I want to be in water. And I was so sad and upset that I hadn't set up like the birthing pool. They were like, have a, like, let's go in the bathtub. So they set up the bathtub and I went into the tub and I got in the tub. And I would say it was less than an hour of pushing that my baby Diego came out, and it was hard work. Like, I'm not going to say that it wasn't, but at the same time, like, I felt capable and empowered. There was one point where I said, and of course, like, this is what's like textbook, like in the birthing class, they say like, there's this point where you're going to be like, I can't do this. Right. And I had gotten to that point where I was like, I didn't say I can't do this. I was like, I don't know what to do. And Tanya just like very firmly was like, yes, you do. You know exactly what to do. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I do know what to do. And that really, like, right after she said that was when I gave like the last like couple of pushes and came out. But you know, it was this thing, like Tanya was there, Emily was there, Myla was there. They were all there supporting me, but like, it was all hands off. Like, there was nobody like, you know, digging around and opening, you know, stuff up and trying to like pull him out. Like, it was very much my partner and these amazing women with me, helping me do what my body already knew what to do. Right.
And believing in you. Right.
Yeah. Ugh,
it's huge.
That's all you need. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I remember when I was pushing, like, Tanya had the Doppler on my belly and she was like, I think his cord might be around his neck. And at first I like kind of freaked out. And then I was like, well, in my head, I thought like his cord's just giving him oxygen. It's not like he's going to be cut off from oxygen just because the cord's around his neck. Right. Like, so I kind of like mentally like that, like clicked in my head for a second. And then as soon as he came out, she unraveled him. He was wrapped with it around his neck like 3 times.
Oh.
And there was like a huge knot in my umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know what he was doing in there. But
a little acrobat.
And it's, well, and especially at night, like, oh my God, he was such a party animal. So, I mean, it makes sense that he had that thing around his neck like 3 times. But yeah, so, and then he was there and he came out and immediately they helped him like kind of crawl up to my chest, even though we were in the water, and we just tried latching, and you know, I sang to him and like my partner was there, and it was just a really like beautiful moment of, you know, warmth and love. And there was no rushing, there was nobody taking him away. It was just really lovely, you know. And then when I was ready, Emily and Mila helped me get out of the bathtub and took me, wrapped me in towels and wrapped Diego up and, you know, took me to my bed and really helped me get comfortable and cozy. And then like, I'm home, right? Like, I'm not in a hospital. I'm at home. Like, you know, I'm in my own bed. Like, how amazing is this? Mm-hmm. And it was funny. They were like, you got to eat something. And I totally didn't want to eat. And like, my partner brought me some rice and beans and I was like, oh, this is gross. Like, I don't want to eat this. But like, they were like, no, you have to eat. Like, you have to eat. And I was like, okay, fine, I ate. But at the same time, like, I was also really worried. So let me backtrack a little. I had a breast reduction about like 10 years ago. So I was very worried that I wasn't going to be able to nurse. And Tanya was like, no, you know, I think you'll be able to nurse. And he was able to latch, and he latched and he got milk. I mean, I didn't produce that much. Like, I had to supplement, but it's again, that confidence that Tanya helped instill in me, not just in my birth, but also in postpartum and being able to nurse and being able to mother. And that matters, like, you know, mm-hmm. like having a clinician that supports you in this way. A friend of mine gave birth around the same time as me. And I was telling her like, oh yeah, I just got off the phone with my doula. She was just checking in to see how like nursing was going. She's like, you still have people checking in on you? And this was like a week later. And I was like, yeah. She's like, you know, that's it. Like, they sent me home. Like, that's it. You know, they're done with me. Whereas like, you know, Tanya, Rabina, you know, Rabina found a donor for milk right away for me.
Ah, oh, that's great.
I mean, just the whole experience has just been one of like, just like women supporting each other, and it's really a beautiful, amazing thing. I feel lucky that that's my experience, and I also feel like it's unfair that that's not the experience that everybody has, you know. Yeah, so where was I? Birth. Oh, so yeah, and then they cleaned up my house.
Like, they're like little fairies, right? I just said that in another interview the other day. I was like, I think it was actually the person who was sharing their story that was calling them fairies. They're just like, woof, 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 all done.
Yeah. And then they cleaned up my house, and I was like, they took away all the, there's no blood, no anything. Like, it was just like, it's like it never happened, except that it did, because he's here in my bed.
There's that reminder.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a very like wild roller coaster ride, that birth, but it was also very, and I was joking. I was like, I had this whole plan, because, you know, you take the childbirth class and it's like, you're going to have this time where you're like really hungry and you're going to be busy and the same thing. And I had this plan that I was going to roast everyone a chicken, because I'm like an excellent cook. So I was like, I'm going to roast a chicken and I'm going to make all these like beautiful things so that when Tanya or Rabina and Mila and Emily get here, like, there's going to be just like a ton of food and snacks because they're going to be hungry. And it totally did not happen that way, like, at all.
It can be very unpredictable that way, right? Labor.
Yeah. Can. I thought I was going to have like candles and little fairy lights. And it's like, nope. I had an outfit planned. Like, no. But it happened the way it was supposed to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, it was great.
So, from the, I'm just trying to get a sense from the first time you thought you were in labor and you started having contractions mm-hmm. to the time of the birth, about mm-hmm. how long was that?
So that started at like 8 a.m., maybe 7 a.m., 7 a.m., like when I woke up, basically. Like, I guess I probably was having the contractions when I was asleep and I didn't really like notice it too much. But from the time I woke up, like 7 a.m., and then I think Diego was born at like 2:45 in the morning, like 2:46 around then. So, yeah.
So a little less than a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it isn't that interesting how I feel like the more of the stories I hear and births I attend, it feels like early labor, there's all this uncertainty. Like you're like, is this really it? Your body's like, eh. But then when things get intense, often that's such a smaller window of time that the perception of the time is like, it flew by.
It didn't really get intense until like, I want to say like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And then it was like, really, like I said, I was like, either have to poo or puke. And then it was like, okay, like this baby's,
this is happening.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. I'd love to hear more either about what the sensations felt like for you at different times in labor and or what you were doing for comfort measures.
So most of my surges were in my lower back, like the pain, which is funny because I assumed it would be like in my pelvis and my uterus, like the front of my body, but it was all in the back. And so really what my partner did was put his fists like into like my lower back and pushed in on that. And then I bounced on that birthing ball a lot.
That ball is amazing, isn't it?
I basically bounced on that ball all day. And I still use it to put my baby to sleep, which is such a bad habit, but you know, whatever.
Why? So, what's wrong with it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but like it goes against the school that I teach in, like the educational philosophy that we have, very much about like, I should be helping him figure out how he wants to put himself to sleep.
Gotcha.
Instead of putting him to sleep.
I see.
So I haven't gotten there yet with him.
He's little. He's still little.
He's a month. Yeah, exactly. I'm not worried about it. I was joking with my boss. I was like, there's things that I would never do in this classroom that I do at home. Other people's children treat them in a certain way. And like mine, I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Anyways, so yeah, most of my surges I felt were like real bad back pain and pain going down my legs and not so much pain in the front, like a period cramp or something like that.
Mm-hmm. When you say pain down your legs, do you mean like your quads or the back?
Down like my quads, like mostly. And it hurt, and the birthing ball really helped a lot. And then like sometimes I'd do the mile circuit or I'd get on my hands and knees. And also I live on the fifth floor of a walk-up. So like there were the stairs. So I went up and down the stairs a couple times. And then like at one point I tried to like lay in bed and listen to music and like take my mind off of it. And that totally did not work. So I went back on the birthing ball. But it was more like when I labored, like every time I felt a surge, the most comfort that I got was from when my partner would really kind of like push down on me and push on my body. And it was funny. So like my doulas didn't really come to like closer to the end. So like I actually didn't get that much physical support from them on my body in person. Like it wasn't a lot of body work, but the emotional and verbal support that I got from them over the phone, they talked me through many a surge. And like I said, Mila's very grounding. Like there was definitely surges where I felt like, I need to scream it was pretty painful, but that didn't happen. It was really Mila helping me kind of like visualize and walk me through it and helping me work through those surges. Is the best way I can describe it.
And some of the things you were describing, like doing stairs and sitting on the ball and the massage on your back, were these things that you guys just thought to do or felt instinctive, or you learned in birth class, or your doulas made suggestions?
So the mile circuit, the stairs, the birthing ball, like those were all Emily's suggestions. And then the pushing on the back thing, I think that came from like the natural childbirth, like the Bradley way, like that book. So my partner had read through that a bit. And so that's kind of like what he had gotten from it. He's like, I think this is a good move. I'm going to do this move. And like, so, and it worked. It was really actually quite helpful. So like, yeah, the Bradley thing came, I think, from like our birth class from Manhattan Birth, which was a great childbirth class. We did the long one, not the express. And that was extremely helpful.
Great. And again, I'll be sure to link to that in the resources for this episode.
Yeah.
Well, so is there anything that you haven't gotten to share? I think you were thinking about sharing a little bit about postpartum in the times of COVID. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I did. Well, there was a couple things I wanted to touch on in the postpartum too, in just the fact how important and how lucky I think I was also to have such great lactation support in a twofold kind of way. So one, like my doulas, Myla and Emily, gave me a lot of like advice and support with lactation, but also Tanya really supported me, especially like in December. I ended up, my whole family ended up getting COVID, unfortunately. But
sorry to hear that.
My supply completely like tanked. Like I had a little, he was getting like an ounce every time he would nurse for me. And then like, we were using like a supplemental nursing system so that he would still latch, but you know, get for me and also like from the supplement. And then when I got sick, my supply completely tanked. And so like, I reached out to Tanya and she was really supportive and like really helped me feel like, A, it doesn't have to be the end of the journey. Like there are resources. She put me in touch with another lactation consultant who like knows a certain ways to like relactate and stuff. And then she also made me feel like, you know what though, if this is the end of my nursing journey, that it was okay. And there was this feeling that I was having, like I was really upset about it because first of all, I didn't think I was going to be able to nurse at all in the first place. And then I actually was able to nurse and I was really excited about that. So like for it to only last like 3 months, I was like really upset about it. And this is, like I said, the support, like after speaking with Tanya, like I just felt, and she didn't say anything like it's going to be okay or anything like that. It was just listening to me, I think. And I just felt, after I had gotten off the phone with her, I was like, you know what? If this is over, I'm okay with it. I got 3 whole months of nursing him and I got attachment and like special bonding time with him that I didn't even think I was going to get in the first place. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think I would have been as okay with that if I didn't have Tanya's support and Myla's support and Emily's support. Mm-hmm. And also like, you know, if I would have had a hospital birth, they would have been like, here's some formula, like good luck, bye. You know, whereas not only did I have all this support, but then when the first couple of days, like he wasn't getting that much food and he lost like a lot of weight. And he was already tiny to begin with. He was like 5 pounds, 12 ounces when he was born. Like apparently women in my family just make tiny babies. I talked to my mom, my sisters, they're all like, we're all under 6 pounds. So he wasn't gaining weight and I was freaking out about it. And Tanya was like, let's give him a little formula. It's okay. Like he's still nursing for me. Let's go look for him. Let's get him fed. Just the way that she like, she's super matter of fact when she talks, but she also is like super caring. Right. And she just makes you feel like it's okay. I was so bummed. I was like, oh, I don't want to give him formula. Then I was like, he needs formula. Like, it's fine. Like, and so Sarah, who's another person who works at Manhattan Birth, came to my house and she stayed in my house for like 2 hours, like showing me different ways to latch, showing me how to use the supplemental nursing system. And it wasn't a fancy one. It was literally just like poke a hole in a nipple and here's a feeding tube and like pop a tube in his mouth. But like she taught me how to do this, right? Like who does that? Like they don't do that for you at the hospital. You know what I mean? And then, like I said, Rabina helped me get donor milk. Myla's helped me get donor milk. Like there's this constant like checking in. And it's like, just because I gave birth doesn't mean that this connection is over. Whereas if I was in a clinical setting, it definitely would have been over, right? So I think that's the important piece where it's like, it's true care. It's not like, well, you're getting prenatal care, you're getting like, you know, your OBGYN care, whatever. But that's not really care, right? That's just somebody like taking your blood pressure, you know. It's not care. It's clinical monitoring and assistance. This is care, right?
This is holistic care, seeing a whole person with mental health, seeing that that matters.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah. And then I did want to touch on the fact that like, you know, giving birth during a pandemic really is sucky. I don't know another word for it. Because when you give birth, you're supposed to have like your village, right? Like you're supposed to have like your mom come and your sisters come and like your friends come over and like someone's supposed to help the baby so that you can like shower and poo in peace and like take a nap and like all this stuff and like eat. And like that didn't really happen for me because it's a pandemic, right? And so that's been kind of hard. But at the same time, like I've at least been lucky enough where I've had a lot of time with my baby. And I'm extremely lucky in that the administration at the school that I teach at is extremely supportive of parents, like extremely supportive. And so when I was supposed to come back at the end of the third month, my boss checked in with me and was like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I don't feel ready. She's like, okay, so you're not ready. You know, I wasn't getting paid, but I wasn't going to lose my job either. You know, she was just like, you know, we're here for you when you're ready, like, you know, come back. And so I came back when I was ready. But so I was really lucky in that. But, you know, having a baby during a pandemic is just hard because you don't get that same amount of support that you would have otherwise in a normal time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the only thing that I wish was different.
Hmm. Is your family local? Your sisters?
No. So that's the other thing with the pandemic, like they can't really like air travel. And like, you know, some people are like immunocompromised. And now like one of my sisters just got the vaccine. She had her first dose and she was actually going to come this weekend. And then she had looked up that she needs both doses in order to not have to like quarantine for 10 days or something like that. So she's like, well, I can't spend 10 days in New York. So she postponed her ticket until after her second dose. But yeah, so I grew up in California. I've lived in New York for almost 20 years now, almost. But I'm originally from California. And my family's kind of like all over the place. Like my mom and one of my sisters live in Miami. And then another sister lives in Oregon. My dad's in Texas. Like we're all over the place. Mm-hmm. So that is a tricky piece. But like I said, like, had it been not a pandemic, I would have had my sisters come over and help take care of me. But that's just not how it was. Yeah. So I would say that was like the hardest part, I think. Being pregnant and like very isolated during pregnancy. And then also during the postpartum, like it's been very like isolating, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe your sort of adopted family is the Manhattan Birth mentorship.
It really is.
It's sort of a support system.
Yeah. The amount of support that I've gotten from Myla and Emily and Tanya and Rubina and all the mentees in my cohort, like it's been amazing. Diego, my baby, he's been on donor because he had some really bad like digestive issues, and he has actually like they went in with a scope and like he has diagnosed reflux, and I was like very, a lot of gastrointestinal things happening. So we tried a million formulas, and then it just didn't work. So he's been on donor milk exclusively since November. And there's people who has milk that's like very far away, and it's been hard for me to go get it because also I have like a 6-month-old, right? So, you know, I post on like the Manhattan Birth Facebook page and like people will go pick it up and like bring it to me. Like,
ah, oh, that's amazing.
Amazing, right? I mean, it's been a wonderful experience.
Mm. Okay, well, is there anything that you haven't gotten to share that you'd like to share before we wrap things up? Or are there any final insights or tips that you would want to pass along to anyone who's expecting a baby?
I think the first thing that I want people to know is that if you are a Medicaid recipient, there's nothing that says that you can't have a home birth. And they like to tell you that they won't cover it, but they at least cover part of it. And you can find midwives who want to help. They're out there. You just have to find them. So that's number one. I think that people should realize that. Number two, I think that the second piece of that is like Emily said, you deserve to have a good birth. You don't deserve a traumatic birth. Nobody does. And I'm certain that if I had stayed at that hospital, I would have had a traumatic birth. So I think there's a thing of believing that you actually deserve something good. And that's hard, especially for a lot of like lower income people like myself or, you know, a lot of people of color. Sometimes that's a hard thing to recognize, that you deserve better. Yeah. And I think that my final takeaway is that if you can help people like Ashe Birthing Services, who have a community fund, like Manhattan Birth, who have a community fund, and if you have the means to do it, you really should, because then you'd be helping someone like myself or another birthing person have a good experience.
Yeah. And even if people don't have the financial resources to help, spreading the word on social media. Yep. There's absolutely ways to spread the word so that people who do have the resources can contribute. So I'll be sure again to post all those links in the resources. Yep. I've brought up these funds and birthing center up in the Bronx that's in the works with yep. the people you've been talking about, the doula, yeah. in a past episode, at least one, if not more than one.
Mila's working really hard to bring a birthing center to the Bronx, mm-hmm. which they really need considering the amount of really just horrible things that have happened to women of color in their birthing situations. Yeah.
Yeah. We need that.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's doing amazing work. I'm so impressed. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really proud to know her and Emily and Tanya and Ravina.
Absolutely.
This entire Agreed. Community. Yeah. And that's the thing too. It's like, it's the first time I've really felt truly welcomed in a community. It's really amazing that, you know, I decided to try my hand at this and see how it goes. And just to be embraced pretty much immediately by the birthing community has been just very eye-opening to me, that this is a real, once again, a community of care. Let's not pretend like these women want to help other women have babies and they want to help other birthing people have babies, obviously, because it's not just women. But, you know, I think they're there for all birthing people. And I think that that's really important.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Charisse. I really look forward to following your work as you get started in birth work. And I'm just so grateful to hear your story and think it'll really make a difference for listeners. So many thanks. And I wish you continued healing and bonding with your sweet baby, especially in this transition going back to work outside the home.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for this opportunity to speak with you about this.
If you're listening to this and don't have the financial resources to pay for whatever you need to have a respectful and safe birth, or you don't know how to find great care, I want to reiterate what Charisse described in her story. Connecting with a doula or childbirth educator are two excellent ways to find the resources you need to have the good birth and respectful care that you deserve to have. I will link to some resources in the show notes for this episode, episode 70, over at birthmattersshow.com to help those who live in the New York area who might need lower cost resources to find great support. If you have either the financial resources or the connections or the time to spread the word about some of the community-based efforts to improve outcomes for birthing people, particularly lower income and or BIPOC folks, please do check out the links in this episode's show notes. Birth Matters and Astoria Doula Collective give a portion of our proceeds to these kinds of efforts because we know it's at this grassroots level that real immediate progress can be made toward improved outcomes, just like you heard about today. Since you heard Charisse share how important it was to find the right care provider for a good birth, I wanted to share a free resource to help you do the same from this episode's sponsor. Your choice of care provider, that is, obstetrician or midwife, is one of the most important choices you'll make toward your best birth experience possible. However, if it's your first time to give birth, it can be really hard to know what questions to ask. You want to find someone who will provide compassionate, individualized care. You want to be aligned with a care provider and birthing location that is compatible with your very personal labor and birth preferences. But where do you even start? I'm so happy to offer you a free guide called Smart Questions to Ask Your Care Provider to help you begin to have these important conversations. To grab your guide, go over to birthmattersonline.com/smart. This guide is usually a resource exclusively for Birth Matters students, but we wanted to make it available to our podcast listeners because it's such a valuable tool and because it's important to start these conversations on the earlier side than you might come to birth class. Again, you can grab the guide at birthmattersonline.com/smart. Now, here's a sneak peek of what's up next week.
I know that Evelyn is physical touch. That's how she gets her affirmation, and she's a strong, determined woman. So I was just there to support her through the whole thing. And like she said, I don't think I stopped touching her the whole time. I had her hands in my hands or was pushing on her back or was any kind of supporting position that she needed throughout the process, which the midwives are really good about. And your class is really good about informing me on ways that I could help. Because you get in there and you're like, one of the ways. So having the knowledge and having rehearsed it was helpful.
Thanks so much for listening to the Birth Matters podcast. We'll see you next week. And remember, you deserve to have a good birth.